What's up, everybody? I'm Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA Podcast. My guest for today is Josh Manuel. He is the drummer for a band called Issues. If you are listening to this, you probably already know who Issues is, but just in case you don't, they're one of my favorite bands of the last 10 years or so. I like to call them jazz, like DJAZZ, gent plus jazz, because that's kind of what they are. They're like progressive metalcore with a whole lot of like funk and jazz and R&B in there. Really unique. I don't think there's anybody else doing what they are doing. In addition to being one of my favorite bands, they're also some of my favorite humans in music. These are just really cool, super talented, humble guys. They're all awesome, but the reason I wanted to talk to Josh is because he has done what I think a lot of people that talk to me want to do. He's taken himself from just a kid who lived in the suburbs with his parents and was pretty good at playing drums, but kind of didn't know exactly how to turn that into his job, to now being a professional drummer. He's been in Issues since, I think, 2012, maybe 2013. Touring, putting out albums, like just doing the thing as a professional drummer. But there's a lot of things that we talk about in this episode that are going to apply to anybody who wants to market themselves as a creative professional. Not just drummers, like whether you're a graphic designer or you make websites or a photographer or, you know, any other kind of service that you want to market to the world. A ton of great stuff that you can take from this conversation and apply to what you're trying to do. So hope you enjoy it. Check it out. If you like what Josh has to say, you can check him out on Instagram at Josh Manuel, M-A-N-U-E-L. And definitely check out Issues if you haven't. And yeah, let's get into it. Hello, everybody. I'm Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA Podcast. And today, my guest is Josh Manuel from Issues. So you guys just rolled into town here. I kidnapped you right off the bus. And just kind of wanted to sit down with you and talk about getting noticed as a musician. Like I was just talking about, I hear from a lot of people, for some reason, feel like it's a lot of drummers that are kind of wondering, like, man, I've spent all this time getting good at what I do, but now I'm realizing that's not enough. Like, what do I do to actually stand out and get noticed and somehow turn this into a job? So you have done that, and I thought I'd pick your brain about how you did it and how other people might be able to do it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I think, like, from an early age, like, I grew up playing in church, and I still play at church when I'm home, and it kind of, like, growing up in that environment where a lot of my friends that, you know, I grew up playing with ended up doing, like, the Nashville thing. So I'm from Atlanta.
Nashville thing meaning, like, session for country stuff?
Or? Yeah, either, like, the pop world or country, and basically, you know, they play for an artist. And so, honestly, that's kind of where I thought I would land, and, like, somehow I ended up playing for Issues.
So it'd be like, you know, you join the Finn McKenty band and 100%. Go on tour as an employee.
Exactly.
Got it.
And so, like, I guess that's what I, like, kind of thought I would end up doing. And then, like, you know, I'm obviously super happy with Issues, but I feel like I kind of ended up slightly, I guess, on the other side of the fence, which is cool. But I kind of feel like I have, like, perspective on both worlds or whatever, just from, like, my friends and stuff. But anyway, they basically, from a young age, like, you know, I always looked up to them, and they kind of instilled, like, that you can't just be good at drums, right? Like, you have to be, like, multifaceted, and you have to, like, you know, basically think like you're essentially a business, more or less. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the more things that you're good at, as far as, like I went to college for film, and, you know, I did a bunch
of
YouTube stuff. And, like, I mean, that's how I got the gig with Issues was, like...
Yeah, talk about that. I kind of know that story, but not exactly. What is that? Tell us about that.
Basically, so I think it was, like, 2013. Me and a buddy, Brian Meadows, had been doing, like, we were in college and we had been doing, like, the home studio thing, where, you know, we're just any and every artist, because we, you know, between Atlanta and Nashville, there's so many different artists. And it was really good for me as a drummer because, like, you know, most of these projects that would come through, it could be hip hop, it could be country, it could be pop, it could be, like, singer songwriter stuff. And I would, like, play on all that. And so, like, you know, sometimes it was, like, really challenging to, or just a genre that I wasn't familiar with or whatever. So it really pushed me from, like, an early age, I guess. But we ended up doing the Issues, like, some of the Issues acoustic record. And
because Issues didn't have a drummer at first, really. Ty just programmed all the drums.
Yeah.
On the EP.
Well, there was a guy named Case, who is, like, my good friend now. But yeah, Ty at the time had programmed the drums, and then for whatever reason, Case and Issues, like, didn't really work out, and they ended up, like, seeing a video I did, which admittedly I covered King, and I was just trying to get some views.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew there's, like,
the Issues song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. King of Amarillo. And I just, you know, I was just trying to get some views. I knew there was a lot of controversy around the song, with the What Was Me thing. And we ended up working together because I was shooting some of Tyler's like video stuff.
Did you know Tyler from like the Atlanta scene?
Kind of. Like we had played, we grew up in the same like scene and played like local band shows.
What's like the one, there's like a suburb town of Atlanta that everyone, what is it?
It's Loganville.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, the venue is called The Movement. And it was legendary. It was like this church and it was like 400 or 500 cap. And it would sell out, like Attila would play it before, like, you know, they started touring nationally. And, you know, they'd sell out 400 or 500 tickets, like, you know, this little church venue. And it was, it was awesome, man.
Those like little local scenes like that, like I lived in Columbus for a while and like the basement in Columbus was like that. Those like little locals, which is where Attack Attack and all those bands kind of came up.
Yep.
It's so cool when there's a little local scene like that. They usually only last a couple years, but just there's these little explosions where tons and tons of like super creative, cool people come up at the same time and end up making waves at like the national level. And,
yep.
And then they go away, but it's so cool when you get to be there and see it.
Yeah, Loganville is weird because it really is a very small town, but like it had, you know, the heavy scene and then it had a really good country scene too. Like I went to high school with Tyler Hubbard from Florida Georgia Line. And so I went to a very small school and it's just weird that he graduated from the same high school. And then
you ever asked him to borrow money?
Not yet.
Okay. I don't know if you ever need to, you know, he's probably got plenty to spare.
Yeah, he's doing all right. And then also John Langston was like a buddy of mine. So it's just, it really is a very weird little small town, like a hotbed of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like heavy scene stuff, you know, like just kind of like across the board.
How did you end up doing video stuff for Tyler?
Basically just a mutual friend. Like Tyler, because I was trying to get better at video. Because I figured, you know, again, like if I want to do the drumming thing, I need to be multifaceted, whatever, mm-hmm. and be good at multiple things. Because obviously, if you're into YouTube, you need to be able to do video, yada, yada. And so I was like, sure, like I'll do it, whatever. And a mutual friend kind of linked us together. And then I started shooting videos. And then he came through the studio. We kind of did more acoustic stuff for their record at the time. They saw the King cover and they were just like, whoa, this is cool, whatever. We kind of jammed together. And like, we immediately, like on a personal level, like we all got along really well. So it kind of just made sense. And then eventually, like, you know, time went on, they asked me to join. And I was like, I love heavy music, but like, yeah. I definitely have never been like the guy that has like insane, like double bass chops or anything.
And I mean, this issue stuff, you know, I'm guessing most people listening to this have heard the band, but if you haven't, that shit's not easy to play.
It's not, yeah. Some of the riffs AJ writes are very intricate.
Yeah, really like odd accents and stuff.
For sure. So at the time it was just like, okay, if I do this, this is really going to be a challenge, which is appealing to me. And like the guy we actually just met in there, Chris Miller, is like my best friend. He, at the time, you know, neither one of us were like touring nationally or whatever, but he had had way more experience touring and doing all that. So he was just like, dude, if you don't take this gig, it's literally just because you're scared. Like, that's the only reason.
I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Like,
yeah,
you got to say, I can't do it. Never mind.
Yeah, literally.
Okay. You just tried.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, I guess, you know, the short version of how we got here, and now we're, 7 years into this, so.
Yeah. So you were doing drum stuff on YouTube from, like, what, 2009 or something mm-hmm. like that? So you were there, like, pretty early.
Yeah, I think so.
Back when there weren't 9 billion drum covers of every song you can imagine. Talk about, like, what gave you the idea to try that?
Well, again, Loganville, being a very small town, there were a lot of musicians, but I didn't ever really land in a band where I felt like there were like-minded people as far as not just music but just like as far as goals and like how I mean the only thing I've ever cared about is music and drums and like I'm kind of that guy that it's hard for me to like I was never really passionate about school just and I kind of wish I was like I tell my little brother all the time I'm like no it does matter but
can't treat who you are though
yeah exactly and that's just kind of how it's always been so I don't know. I never really felt like I had an option, but I just knew that if I wanted to do it, again, like, you know, I was raised by a bunch of guys who were kind of like hired guns, more or less. And I just knew that having the attitude of like, if I'm not practicing or if I'm not getting better, there's definitely someone else who is and will eventually surpass me and take my gig probably. So I guess that's kind of always been my like outlook on it.
It's interesting because the way you talk about that is like, that's kind of how I hear a lot of the people who are in the Nashville kind of scene think about it as a job. You know, of course it is creative and it is art and all that stuff, but That's a big difference from how I hear the Nashville guys think about it. It's like, this is a job. I need to be good at it. It's competitive. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got to beat other people who want the same job as me. And that's very different from how you hear, like, rock people talk about it.
Yeah, I think so. And, well, just the reality of being, like, a hired gun. You know, okay, say you...
I think some people don't understand how fucking good all these people in Nashville are.
Yeah, they're very good.
Real good.
Which is good, because from a young age, you know, I think the bar... Or at least in my little my head, the bar was just set really high, just from my friends, which I'm lucky to be, you know, to have something to compare, you know, myself to or whatever. But you know, the bar was just set really high. So I think realistically, if you play for, like the guy that, you know, you look back in your life and you have people who like that, you know, that piece of advice like really changed whatever. Like one of the guys that like literally taught me how to hit a snare drum, which is like half the gig. You know, if your hands sound good and you can just play, then you're pretty good, you know. That's half of it, yeah. But he plays for Maren Morris now. The thing is, like playing for an artist, I think you know, if you're in a band, like Issues is a four piece. I think with our band, each person, you know, we all write, and each person is very like, you can hear everyone's influence, all four of us in the music. But if you play for an artist, there's a lot of people that are really good and play for artists. So like, you know, Maren Morris's fans or whoever's fans, any pop artist, country artist, whatever. Like, if she were to get a new guitarist or a new drummer.
I don't give a shit who's playing guitar on this tour.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
And so it's just a different world. And so it is, realistically, it is more competitive. And there are people that want your gig.
Yep. So a thing that I think is interesting to pick up from this is, like, A, just that you recognize the need to put yourself out there and make people aware that you exist. Because
for sure.
It doesn't matter how good you are if nobody knows you're out there, nobody knows who you are, like... I think a big part of this in any creative field is just being top of mind. In other words, like when someone goes, hey, we need a drummer, or hey, we need somebody to take pictures, or we need a guy to make a website or a girl to make a website. Like, who is the first person that comes to mind?
Yeah.
You want it to be you.
For sure.
I think that's a big part of it. And you have a good sized YouTube following, but it's not gigantic.
Mm-mm.
And the thing to take away from that to me is it doesn't have to be gigantic, because all you need is one break at the right time and it could change your life.
Yeah, 100%.
So like you don't think, you know, you don't need to have a million views of your cover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's cool, but yeah. Really it doesn't matter if some kid in Slovenia is watching your video. It's nice.
Yeah.
But exactly. If you're trying to get a job as a professional, whether that's as a drummer or photographer or whatever, like really if 50 people see your video, that's okay if it's the right 50 people. So,
yeah,
like, it's 100%. Easy for people to get, like, lost in the numbers.
Yeah.
And forget that that's really not the end game.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And, I mean, you know, like you were saying, 2009, I started doing drum covers. And I guess, you know, at that time, there wasn't a ton of people doing it. And I literally had no idea what I was doing. You know, I bought an interface and some drum mics, and I, like, recorded on, like, my cell phone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, like, sure, I think this is how you do it. But, like, Cobus and Chaser were the two drum channels that, like, and most of those, you know, those guys were covering, like, Under Oath and, mm-hmm. like, but at the time, I think the video that kind of, you know, you have that one video that kind of gets way more traction and brings more, you know, viewers to your channel or whatever, and it was me covering Skrillex.
Uh-huh.
And it literally was just me playing, like, 2009 metalcore fills over... Uh-huh. You know, dubstep. But for whatever reason, that one video like kind
and
of
how many
me.
How many videos did you put up before that one?
Probably at least 20.
Okay.
And a lot of those videos have like no, you know,
yeah,
under 1,000 views.
So you strike out 17 times.
100%. Yeah.
But then you get on base of the 20th one and your life is different all of a sudden.
Yeah. And I think you're spot on with, I never viewed my channel as like, oh, how many subscribers can I get? How many views can I get? It was literally, I just viewed it as like, oh, well, all I want is a really good gig. And if someone, you know, I'm from a small town, so if someone from like even Atlanta, which is 45 minutes away from Loganville or whatever, if they see this one video, I've viewed it as like a business card.
Exactly, yeah. And do you need to pass out a million business cards to get a job? I hope not.
Yeah.
Like, if you have to do that, then you probably suck.
Yeah, exactly. I just needed the right person to see the right video or whatever.
Exactly. The right, you just, right place, the right, like, just be top of mind.
100%.
And when someone goes, shit, we need a drummer, hey, let's call that guy Josh that did the cover.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll do it.
That's essentially what happened. And I think what a really important, like, because I teach drum lessons on the road, and towards the end of the lesson, you know, I do a bunch of, like, nerdy, like, technique stuff and, like, dive down whatever, you know, rabbit hole they want to go into as far as, like, technique stuff. But at the end of the lesson, I always just open it for like questions, because I think a lot of people have just music industry questions and stuff. But like one of my biggest advice, like tips for people is just like say yes. Like even if you're terrified, like obviously don't join a million bands, but like, you know, just go for it. And if you fail, you fail, and it's fine. Like I've told this story a few times, but like I think the thing I learned the most from was my first like big Nashville session that I completely botched, like completely bombed it. And it was for a buddy of mine, Mitch Parks, and it was a band called After Edmund. And they were just doing a Nashville session, whatever. And it was awful. Like they laid bass, laid guitar, had the vocal idea, and they're like, all right, man, like get in there and, you know, just see you you got some ideas flowing. It was awful. It was so awful.
Was it because you were like psyched out or something technical you didn't know how to do, or?
I think all of that probably.
Just weren't ready.
Yeah. When I was young, man, I was like 18, and I didn't understand at that time that within that environment in that studio, like I just need to be able to crank out ideas, multiple ideas, because if they don't like one, I need to have options of like, you know, we can do this, we can go this way, we can create this vibe. Because, you know, with drums, it's a lot about dynamics, and a lot of it's how it feels, you know, how it makes a song feel.
That's how I think of drums, is like, it's like setting the vibe of the part. You play
100%.
The same, you know, guitar and vocal part, you play it with like 16th note double bass, that's going to feel one thing. You play it in like halftime on the china, it's going to feel completely different.
Exactly. And so like, I think I just overall didn't do a good job of that. And like weeks went by, like I definitely knew that I didn't do well, but my buddy Mitch called me and he's like, hey man, I love you, but I just want to let you know we ended up going with another guy. Like, you know, you bombed, right? Like, and I was like, yeah, man. I was like, yeah, dude, I know, it's totally cool. You know, and like me and him still talk today. He actually plays for pop artist now, Lena Stella. I'm wrong. She was on that Chainsmokers tour.
Oh, okay.
She's opening that. But he's awesome. And I mean, that was just something that I always point back to as far as like a huge, you know, technically, I think a lot of people would look at that as like a failure, because I definitely didn't succeed.
Yeah.
But I learned so much from that. And like now, you know, 10 years later, like I'm super comfortable in a studio environment because I learned the hard way of like what's expected of me.
Right.
And so like, you know, then from then on, that was the bar, and I figured out how to reach that and then become comfortable.
And I'm sure anybody you can think of has a similar story about when they completely shit the bed.
For sure.
In some high pressure situation, and it's fucking embarrassing.
Oh yeah.
But you know, you got to do it once and you might as well get it out of the way, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, just if you're listening to this and you're worried about like messing up or not being good enough for some gig, or just go for it. Literally just go for it. And if it doesn't work out, you're going to learn a lot and it's not the end of the world.
Brush the dust off and get back to it.
Yeah, 100%.
So I'm curious, joining Issues when you did with that lineup, there are quite a few people on Issues at that time that are pretty good drummers.
Yeah.
was that a thing at all? Or they don't give a shit? Or
it was, man. And that's something when I kind of was like, well, why me?
Right.
And I think at the time we had jammed, and they're like,
there's got to be more like good drummers per capita in 2013 Issues than like any other band.
Yeah, there was. And, you know, Ty's a great drummer. Tyler is a good drummer. Uh-huh. AJ plays drums.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Sky's literally the only member that actually doesn't physically play drums, which was, you know, it was definitely like a big role to step into. And I knew it would really push me, and it has continuously pushed me for the past 7 years, which is exactly what I want. So I'm really happy with that. But they had, I still think about this, 'cause they had options. They had a lot of options. And, I know some of the guys that were up for the gig, and for whatever reason, either because of like the way we clicked personally or just some of the ideas maybe I brought to the table groove wise, I was their first choice.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gourley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, peer pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
So I think this is another good takeaway, is that as a creative professional, again, whether you're a drummer, photographer, graphic designer, whatever, like it's about more than just your work.
Oh, for sure.
A lot of it is about you as a person, whether you get along with people. Like, I think one of the reasons why I get along with you guys so well as a band is because you guys are all really like mild-mannered people. Maybe not Tyler as much, but like but like everybody, I mean, he's not really crazy or anything like that, you know. You guys are all very like mild-mannered, quiet, like chill people, and all like very, very, very into music.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
That might sound obvious, but there's lots of bands that aren't really into music.
That was probably the most shocking thing for me when I started touring more, is realizing how many, and there's, you know, everyone does things for different reasons, and there's like, I'm never gonna say my reasons are the right ones, but yeah, you're right. Like, I think our band really loves music. Like, we literally just sit on the bus, play video games, and listen to music. And, you know, of course we do other things at times, but yeah, man, like, I'm thankful that
there's a lot of people in big bands that never play their instrument other than when they're on stage.
Yeah, 100%.
They don't play it in the studio. They don't care.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the bassist, yeah, I don't know. The guitarist will play my shit. I'm just going to stay home.
100%.
And that there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but it's weird to me.
Same. I do. I agree. And yeah, when I started touring, I was kind of shocked to see how many bands kind of have that vibe where there's like, you know, one or two guys that kind of write everything or do everything, and the other guys are kind of just there to, you know, play on stage and like, you know, do the rock star thing or whatever they think it is.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big thing, is like, make sure, and that's another reason why I think it's so smart to do content, like whether it's YouTube or podcast or whatever, like show who you are, because that's
for sure
a big part of what's going to get you the gig. Is like, if there's 10 people who are equally good at playing drums, you're going to pick the person who you get along with best on a personal level, because you got to live together on this bus however many months out of the year.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. And it's the same if you want to be a photographer. Like, so we had we hired a wedding photographer, obviously, mm-hmm. when we got married, and we talked to a bunch of people, and they were all pretty good. And a big part of why we chose the woman we did is just because, like, she used to be like a personal trainer, and I was like, okay, I like her because she's going to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
She's not going to wait around for us to tell her what to do, because I don't know how you shoot a wedding.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You tell me. And she's just like, okay, stand here, do this. Now move over there, stand there.
Yep.
Great, this is what I want.
Exactly.
Somebody else might hate that.
Yeah.
But that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
Sure. And, you know, same with a drummer. Like, somebody, some bands are going to want somebody that contributes a lot musically. Other people are going to be like, I programmed your shit, just play it.
Yeah, for sure.
And none of those are right or wrong. It's just about what is the right fit for you.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that is something that whenever people are getting into just entertainment industry in general, that they don't realize, like, how much of just being, like, a good hang is, it's literally half the job. Because you're right. There's a lot of people that, you know, it could be photography, it could be drumming, it could be guitar teching, it could be anything. There's a lot of people that are good at what they do, but, you know, again, like you said, you know, we're out here for 6 weeks, everybody's living together on like a small little box with wheels, you know, like you have to get along, you have to be cool, you have to be nice, and that's half the gig, literally.
Like, yeah.
That's, because if you're, you can be the best at anything, but like, if you're a dick, no one's gonna wanna be around you.
There's lots and lots of people, like if you look at, you know, you can think of people who are constantly going from band to band, or maybe a band where there's one or two people in the band and they're constantly changing members. There's a reason for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's because there's something up with those humans, you know?
Literally, yeah.
You don't want to be around them for whatever reason.
100%.
So let's talk about lessons, because this is a thing, I feel like it's a relatively recent thing that people started doing lessons on the road. Like, nobody did that, you know, 15 years ago, really. Mm-hmm. I don't even think they really did it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Talk about that as, like, you know, a source of income and, like, how you think about that.
Okay. When I first started doing them, my intent was for them to genuinely be lessons, right? So I didn't want it to be some sort of, like, in any way feel like a hang session or, like, a VIP thing. Like, that, I've purposely steered it the opposite direction.
Why is that?
That's just not my vibe.
Yeah, I would do that too. I don't, I'm paying for like a meet and greet, feels super weird to me.
It is, and we do that, and we all talk about it. And I mean,
kids want it though, you know.
Yeah,
it makes them happy.
It is. It's still weird. That, I think that's why we do, because we do the VIP meet and greet as a band, but we genuinely try very hard to make it genuine and engaging. We do like on this tour, we're doing like an acoustic performance. We do this cool like photo booth thing where we actually get to like hang for a second, say hi, you know, take some goofy photos. And then after that, we do like a Smash Bros tournament. And I think that's really cool because we genuinely get to just like hang out.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could probably talk forever about the morals of the whole VIP thing is it's odd. But
it's the same as like signing an autograph feels weird, but somebody wants you to sign their drum head, and
yeah,
if it feels weird to you, if it makes them happy, then, you know.
For sure. I just knew with lessons, I wanted it to be like focused on like genuinely, you know, true like drum lessons. Like, hey, like the first thing I always ask someone whenever they take a lesson, hey, you know, how long you been playing? You know, what are your influences? You know, what are your goals? And then what do you suck at the most? Because obviously, you know, if you want to get great at something, you focus on your weak links, whatever. And so I really try to just like dive into that with them. And I keep it really open whenever I teach lessons, like whatever they want to focus on.
And how many, are these like individual lessons or a group or?
Usually it's like one or two.
Okay.
Students. I try not to, like if there's a city that has like four or five people, then I will kind of cut it off. Because at some point it's kind of like.
Can't really teach drums to 12 people at once.
Yeah, I mean, like I did that clinic thing with SJC,
yeah,
on that tour, and that was awesome. But obviously that's like, okay, every night I know what I'm teaching. I'm not like, it's, you know, the more people that's there, it's harder to dive into exactly what they want to improve on.
Like I do jujitsu, and they have these seminars where like some famous black belt will come through town, and there'll be like 60 people there, and it's the same thing. They sort of will show their signature thing, like if, yep, someone's really good at this particular armbar setup, they'll show that, and they're not giving individual instruction. It's just like, I'm going to show you how to do this armbar setup,
yep,
to 60 people.
Yeah.
It's almost like a show.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's why like, I kind of adapted what I would do for lessons, when I was teaching the clinics. Because, you know, again, it's kind of like, okay, here's a set curriculum. But with the lessons, it's just, honestly, man, I really enjoy it. I think it personally makes me better, like over time, you know. I always like try to keep the mentality of I really genuinely believe I can learn something from every single person. Like even when I'm touring, This tour is awesome because everyone on this tour is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so,
definitely. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of musicians on this. So this tour is Polyphia.
Oh, yeah.
So obviously.
Us, Polyphia, Lil Aaron, and Sleep Token. And so everyone is awesome, and they're great players, and they really care. And so, you know, I always try to take that opportunity to, like, pick, you know, pick people's brains and, hey, you do this one thing way better than I do. What do you do? Or, you know, what are you doing there? And, you know, usually... I'd say 98% of people are totally cool with that. And then the other 2%, I'm just punishing. but yeah, man, I think lessons, it's something I genuinely enjoy. It is a good source of income. And also, I think I just get a lot out of it. And I really do try to send, like, my students home with, like, at least 4 or 5 things they can literally go home and start working on.
So I think, you know, I like that because a lot of people do sort of treat it as a meet and greet, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with that.
No, not at all.
But for me personally, that's what I would want to do too, is like, I'm going to try to actually teach you something that's going to be useful.
For sure.
Just because I guess that's how my brain works.
Yeah, I think me too. And I, like, whenever, because I do it all through email, I keep it really simple. You know, you just email me, and like, here's my rate. And I always ask, how long have you been playing? Because I try to gear the lessons towards intermediate players and more advanced players, because realistically, like, I only have an hour, and I'm not opposed to teaching someone who's, like, more new to drums, but the amount I can teach you if you're, you know, okay, like, all right, let's, you know, count to four, put
right,
the
right.
snare on 2, 4, whatever, you know, I can teach much more at a quicker pace if, you know, they have...
They don't need you to
teach. Yeah, you know, there's a million YouTube videos, right? So I think most of my students have been playing for typically, like, 10 or more years. Which is awesome, because then we're able to really dive in.
They're pretty good drummers.
Yeah, man. And that's, again, why I really enjoy it. And, you know, I always try to preface the emails of, like, whenever you come in for the lesson, know what you want to work on. And we only have an hour, so I'm going to move fast. And, like, it's awesome. It usually goes really well.
And so you book those, you'll just, like, post on Instagram or something that you're doing lessons, email me at this address.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
Set it up.
Yeah, and then I just don't, the hardest part about it is just, like, coordinating with, like, all the other stuff going on during the
right.
day. But yeah, it's really, I try to just keep it simple.
Cool. And so you do, so you're making, you know, whatever, 50 or 100 bucks a day or something from that, which is, you know, nobody's getting rich off that, but that adds up over the course of a tour.
Yeah, for sure. I have a couple of different, like, I don't want to call them side hustles, but other things I'm passionate about that is a source of income. Like I teach lessons, but I also do like drum samples, and I sell, you know, sample packs, which is a really good source of, like, passive income, because literally all you do is, you know, I have a website that hosts my files and people can download them.
Yeah. So everybody wants to sell drum samples.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many sample packs. What do you think makes yours successful in a way that, I mean, usually they sell like 10 the week that they come out and then like 2 a year after that.
Yeah. Well, the way I view it is, like, I always, when I'm home, I make videos. And realistically, that's just kind of to keep me sane, like keep my chops up, keep me creative, keep me writing. But, you know, those videos kind of help sell the samples, because I'm always like, you know, I'm nerdy about, like, sound and engineering. So I'm always trying to get my drums to sound better when I'm home. And, you know, if they like the sounds of the videos, basically you can just grab the sample pack. It's kind of like a whole, they kind of sell themselves essentially, just because I'm doing that anyway. I'm going to be doing that anyway. So I use those videos to sell the samples, and it, I think, kind of continuously sells throughout the year, as opposed to, like, the first week it comes out and then no one kind of cares after that.
Right. I probably should have looked closer, but are these, like, contact libraries or just waves, or how do you package them?
They're mostly just waves, but we built, like, on this last pack, we built, like, a battery template, and I just did a bunch with a buddy of mine, and I think we're going to try to do, like, the contact thing too.
Contact sucks.
Yeah, really. Building all the files really sucks.
It sucks.
But yeah, man, it's my whole thing with all the things that I'm involved in, as far as, like, passive income or other forms of revenue, is that I want to be genuine about it, because I think people can, like, read that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I ever make a clothing line, like, it's probably, I don't know, something probably went wrong.
Okay.
And not that there's anything against making a clothing line, but it's just...
But for you.
Yeah, that's not what I'm passionate
when
about.
When Franz makes clothing, it's authentic.
Of course.
He's into that shit.
Exactly.
He's stoked on it.
Yep.
If he made a sample library, that would be weird.
Probably, yeah. I mean, that's my point. Yeah.
You know, it's... So, I guess, getting back to what you were saying earlier, is, like, for all these things, it's, like, there usually isn't like a right or wrong answer. It's just about like what is right for you as a human, as a player. It's like it all depends. And so I think people oftentimes try to just take someone else's career as a template and just copy and paste it into their life, but you're a different person.
Exactly.
And it probably won't work.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I want to do, obviously, again, you want to have other sources of revenue, especially being in this world, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something at the end of the day, I really, if I'm going to do it, I want to be passionate about it. And I don't want it to ever seem like a money grab. So I just try to keep that in mind whenever I'm like thinking of different ideas. Because I think people see that.
They do. And it's a double-edged sword that your audience is very, like, they care about you, which is cool because it means they'll support your projects. But it also means that if you fuck up, they get mad.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And they should.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But that's kind of the double-edged sword of having people care about you is that, you know, it cuts both ways.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's, especially with, like, you know, offering a product, anything that costs money, there's a line, and if you step across that line, it is not going to be fun.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't know. You're like, oh, fuck, I guess, yeah, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have done that, but, you know, sometimes you accidentally step over that line.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just goes back to the whole, like, failure thing. You know, you got to try stuff to realize if it works or not.
So, let's talk about endorsements, sponsorships, that sort of thing. So I know you work with SJC. Do you have other endorsements? Or
yeah, SJC, Vic Firth, Zildjian, and Evans. And we're also with JH Audio, like in-ears.
Gotcha. So how do you, I'm sure there's a story for each one of those, but broadly speaking, how does that sort of thing come together? Do they come to you? Do you meet them at NAMM? Like, what is this? How do you end up endorsing a product?
SJC, I've been working with for like 11 years now. So me and those guys are really close, and we have a great relationship. So just over the years, as you know, I guess I progressed as a player and progressed as, like, you know, I joined Issues, and then Issues progressed as a band, whatever, you know, our deal kind of changed accordingly. But what I always tell people is that at the end of the day, it really is just like, it's just business. So like, it's not just, hey, can you give me free stuff?
Right.
Like, you know, you have to, they're going to be giving you deals or free stuff or whatever based off of what you can offer them as well. So, you know, it's a two-way street. Like, they're not just going to give you stuff if you don't have an audience for, you know, them to promote their product. And I think with Vic Firth, it was Pablo from Chelsea Grin, mm-hmm. who's the best dude. One day I was just like, wait, you don't have anyone who gives you sticks? and I mean, they don't give me sticks, but, and so he just introduced me. And then from there, Zildjian was actually kind of hard. I had to go, there was a Vic Firth meetup, and Zildjian and Vic Firth are kind of the same thing.
Okay.
Essentially, as far as like, I think they're literally now the same company, but they had a meetup in Nashville, and I knew Zildjian reps would be there. And so I just went, and, you know, face to face.
So again, putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And maybe they would have told you to fuck off.
Yeah. It was so, like, imagine a room in Nashville full of drummers and no one really knows each other. It was the weirdest thing.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, man, I really wanted Zildjian, and I wanted to, I think, you know, an email saying, hey, give me things only goes so far.
Sure. Because how many of those do they get a day?
Hundreds, I'm sure.
So there's 500 people that email them.
Yeah.
And even if, how many people were there at this meetup? 50 or something?
Yeah, probably less, probably like 30, yeah.
Okay, so there's 500 people that emailed them. There's only 30 people that showed up.
Yeah.
And so right there, you automatically like put yourself above almost everybody else. I mean, just by the act of showing up.
Yeah.
Like, I think so much of this stuff is just about showing up.
I agree, yeah.
Put yourself in the same room as the people you want to work with. Yeah. It's not going to work every time, but it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and even from that point on, I think I still had to kind of like chase a few people down to get the right rep.
Mm-hmm.
But it all stemmed from me just going and being awkward in a room with a bunch of other drummers.
Right.
And then, let's see, Evan's drum heads actually is pretty recent. I think heads are very difficult because, one, it's, you know, everyone uses them. And also, like, there's just a ton of really big names. So, like, I think it's just harder to get heads. But Evans has been great. And I think I got that through another, like, a mutual friend introducing me through an email.
So networking.
Yeah.
And that goes back to being a good hang. Like,
exactly.
If people like you, they'll be more inclined to hook you up. If they don't like you, it doesn't matter how good you are. Yeah. Like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about your reputation as, like, you know, as a person. Is he, or are they a good hang? Can they play, or can they do their job well? Like, literally that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, time goes on and the industry goes on and no one stays where they are. You know, people go up, they go down, they get bigger gigs, they get smaller gigs, whatever. And some, you know, a way to really land like a big gig is just to have, you know, some friends that are already in that world and, oh yeah, we toured together like 5 years ago and
right,
we were doing 200 cap rooms, whatever. You know, and just having them being able to vouch for you and just be like, oh yeah, he can play and he, you know, he's a good dude.
Especially if you were there with them when you were both nobodies.
Yeah, 100%.
Then they know that you're not just trying to be friends because they've got a name.
Yeah, that's the worst. Yeah, for sure.
So I have two more questions. A big thing in any creative field is like, should I focus on having a broad skill set that will appeal to a lot of people, or should I narrowly focus on one particular thing and style and just go deep in that? I think you are, and generally speaking, my personal opinion is better to focus, but I think you are a good counterexample of that. You can play pretty much anything, I think, in any style.
I see that I fooled you.
No, but I mean, I know you're being humble, but really, like, if you look at your YouTube channel, you play a lot of shit in a lot of different styles.
I try to, yeah. And again, that goes back to the YouTube thing being a business card, right? My whole thought process with the YouTube thing is, like, I want to show people that I can play multiple genres, that I'm passionate about playing multiple genres, that, you know, I can play Pocket over this Ariana Grande song, or I can put blast beats over a Suicide Boys song, mm-hmm. because I'm an idiot.
Well, that's kind of the Nashville mindset to me, I think.
I think, like, so, yeah.
If you got a session, call me and I'll get it done.
Yeah, and again, you know, that goes back to me doing the studio stuff for like 4 or 5 years before Issues. It really challenged me, and like Brian Meadows was a guy I was working with, and he's honestly a genius, and just being able to work with him for so long was really, because that pushed me too. But to your question, man, I don't know. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. I think, my mindset was kind of crafted by the people I was around, which is, I think, kind of more a Nashville, like, it really is kind of the hired gun mindset. But I do try to, I still, to this day, am trying to learn more genres, and I just want to be able to play, like, say if I was playing for an artist, and they, you know, a lot of these, some of these gigs are like on the fly, they'll call something out and you got to be able to do it. And I want to make sure I can do it.
Yeah.
You know,
be kind of awkward to raise your hand and be like, actually, I can't, sorry.
Yeah, no, 100%. And so, I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. Like, I know there's some dudes who like are really into like extreme drumming and playing really fast and precisely. And, you know, they can do things that I will never be able to do at speeds. I will never be able to do it. But you ask them to, like, just kind of vibe with a band and sit in the pocket and support a vocalist.
Play a 311 song. Yeah.
It's not going to feel the same.
Yeah. But you know,
that's
even,
okay, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And to that point, I mean, there's guys like Alex Rudinger that make a career out of that.
100%.
You know?
Alex can do both. Because he's great.
He is great. But even then, when you hear him play with, like, Good Tiger, and I think Alex is fucking amazing, but like, I would say he's not the best rock drummer in the world, you know?
I don't know.
I
thought his parts were really cool.
I think he was not the right person for that band, for the reason that he is a very, like, robotic drummer in a good way. Because when he's playing, like, death metal to me, it sounds fucking amazing and perfect.
Yeah.
Because he is, I heard some of his unedited drums once. Oh, I didn't know they were unedited. And I told my friend who recorded them, I was like, I don't know, they sound a little over-edited to me. He's like, dude, I didn't touch them.
That's great.
And that's Alex, you know? And that's awesome for some styles, maybe not so awesome in other styles. So anyway, I guess the point is...
No, I feel you, for sure.
The point is, you know, it's, again, about... But, you know, I don't think that's a conscious decision on that part, on his part. I think that's just who he is.
Yeah.
And it would be stupid for him to try to be something other than who he is.
Yeah, I agree.
Just the same as, like, it'd be stupid for you to try to be a death metal drummer, because it's not your thing.
It would go very badly for me. I mean, yeah, I don't know if he's filling in or what the long-term situation is, but he's with Whitechapel. And I saw them at Self Help, And I was like, yeah, this is sick.
Great drummer for Whitechapel. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I mean, that's a good example of getting back to what we were talking about before. To me, he is top of mind for if you need a drummer that plays, if you need a metal drummer,
yeah,
he's one of the top like three people I would call.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's because he's done it and he's, you know, puts himself out there on YouTube. Like he does all this stuff. Like he's done a great job of being top of the mind. And that is a tiny, tiny little niche.
Yeah.
But he's doing it.
Yeah, of course.
He has done a good job of narrowly focusing on that thing and being top of mind within that tiny niche.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that, I don't think there's a right or wrong way to go about it. I just think it all depends on your goals and like what you, where you want to end up. Because if it is, you know, again, if you're focused on becoming like, if you're focused on playing, you know, 16th notes at 300 BPM and you're the best to do it, then yeah, you're going to get gigs.
I'm still working on like 8th notes at 80 BPM. Yeah. So maybe one of these days. Last question I have is, so you talked about being from like a smaller suburb of Atlanta. I hear this a lot. People, you know, again, creative professionals in any kind of field, but let's say drummers, a lot of people wonder like, should I move, you know, I'm from this town, should I move to a big city? Should I move to LA or New York? Again, I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer to that, but my personal take on it is like, I think there's a lot to be said for like staying somewhere where cost of living is low. And I think you can do a great job of building a following online that doesn't necessarily require you to like be in one of those super competitive, super expensive cities. On the other hand, there's a lot to be said for like, you know, being where the action is. What do you think?
That's a very good question because I'm currently have been talking to my wife about that because we live four hours from Nashville. And at this point, like the majority of my friends are living in Nashville. But yeah, the cost of living is much higher. I think if I did live in Nashville as opposed to like suburban Atlanta, I would work more when I'm home, which means, you know, I would make more money. But at the same time, cost of living is really high. So,
and it's a little bit different too, because you already have a name.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like if you were 18 and nobody knew who you were, would it be a different, would you have a different opinion on it or no?
I still think I would say move to Nashville because see, I don't think I'd ever move to LA.
Yeah.
I just, there's plenty of people that I know from LA that grew up there that I love dearly. And there's a lot of people that I know that moved to LA that I don't love so dearly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's with every city, right? But Nashville is just a little more my vibe, I think. But at the same time, man, I know a lot of people who, like friends of mine from high school, who straight out of high school just moved to Nashville and crushed it. But I think if you do that thing where you, okay, I'm going to go to a big populated city where I know, you know, I can potentially get a gig, you have to like, you're there for
make
that reason.
Yeah,
yeah, you, yeah, don't mess around.
Don't like, get a job at Office Max and party 3 days a week. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Like if you're moving to a city to do a thing, do that thing all the time until, you know, you can afford the move and basically, for, you know, to where it makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah.
I'm excited. And I guess anything, this won't come out until after this tour is over, so you can't promote the tour, but anything else that people should check out?
I'll be releasing new drum samples from the kit we used to record Beautiful Oblivion, which I'm really excited. I did them with Johnny Reagan, engineer from Atlanta, who's awesome. So hopefully those will be out by the time this is out as well. And if you came to the Beautiful Oblivion tour, then I hope you enjoyed it because it's honestly my favorite tour we've ever done. So thank you for having me, man. I had a lot of fun.
Cool.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.